Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blasingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc. All rights reserved.
We're back. It's 12 after the hour. I'm Jim Blasingame, the Small Business Advocate, and thank you for joining me. It's always a pleasure. Joan Pride is our guest, and it's almost always a pleasure when she joins us, depending on what kind of mood she's in. But I think she's in a pretty good mood today. Joan's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. Joan, welcome back.
Hey, I resemble that remark.
Are you in a good mood today, Joan?
Can you tell?
I can tell. You know, this is Gruntled Workers Day. Did you know that?
Gruntled, as opposed to disgruntled?
Disgruntled. Gruntled. Yes, yes. So gruntled workers, I guess that's another way of saying happy.
We're happy?
Yeah. So are you gruntled or disgruntled?
Gruntled sounds worse than disgruntled, I think.
It does. Well, it's one of those things you have to think about. And if you have to think about too much, it becomes like homework, and then you become disgruntled. I have no idea where we're going with this, folks. But let's get into the letter, Joan. This week, you guys have actually got some pretty good news on the jobs front, don't you?
Boy, yeah. We're saying job creation will gain momentum in the next few months because, you know, it's been kind of spotty lately.
But, but think about it, Joan. I mean, we're creating 2 million jobs a year.
Not good enough.
And just because, just because the economy is dropping, you know, maybe it takes can I take a breath here for a minute? Give me a break, you know. Just because it's not 200,000 jobs a year, it's only 160,000 a month.
Well,
I mean.
And if it was 200,000, we'd have a real problem because the Fed would be going crazy trying to stave off inflation.
Like they're not
crazier than they are now.
Like they're not already.
Like
right. Like how many was it? 129 raises in a row or something like that?
Yes.
It is. It has been like 16 or 17, hasn't it?
Yes, I think it has.
Which you know, well, don't get me started on that. Anyway, the good news is, though, the job creation thing is that companies, as you guys report this week, are actually, you know, profits are up, companies are flush with cash.
Yeah.
And when they have that kind of cash situation, they're more likely to hire employees, aren't they?
Oh, exactly, yes.
That's happening not only for big companies, that's happening for smaller companies.
Right.
And smaller companies are contributing significantly to, more significantly than ever before, to the hiring process because they're able to convert some of this pricing power that we've had over the last few years, which also creates some inflation, to job growth.
Right.
You know, that's the reason why, Joan, I'm really not all that concerned about the inflation. I mean, I know the Fed is, and I don't want it to get up above 4% or anything like that. But, Joan, you can't have full employment like we have. You can't have small businesses being able to pass through their expenses to their customers and therefore be able to make a profit. You can't have those profits then turned into jobs and raises
right.
So people can buy bigger houses and more cars and keep the economy going. You can't have all that with 1% inflation. It just does. It's by definition, can't happen.
Exactly.
So a little bit of inflation, you know, in the 3 or less range, in my opinion, it's not that bad. But Joan, you know, look where we would be on inflation if somehow we could get oil prices down.
Well, I know that would be stunning, particularly given the reverberations that high oil prices have through the economy.
Oh yeah, and we'll talk about that in a minute when we get over into the Middle East topic, but one of the things that you guys point out is that productivity gains are slowing a little bit. And one of the reasons is because of we've already been pretty darn productive over the last several years, haven't we?
Right. I was going to say, as soon as you said that, you know, don't take this as a bad sign necessarily. I'm not sure how much more productive we could get. I'm sure there's always room for improvement, but that was one of the things that I think one of the hard lessons that was learned after the last recession. And in fact, if you remember, I think back when Mr. Greenspan was Fed chairman, he was having trouble believing the productivity
numbers. He didn't believe it. He didn't believe his own eyes.
Right, exactly.
He didn't know what to do with all that because we talked about that on the show.
Yeah,
you and I did, and with
many
others.
Times, yeah.
And I said, you know, what is it he doesn't get? He was like he couldn't believe what was happening. And in a way, you can't blame them because we were experiencing. Even if you discount the wackiness of some of the .com stuff, a lot of the things that were going on were the conversion from human power to technology power and the resulting productivity from that.
Right.
And now in the 21st century, we got a lot more of that going on. And Joan, here's the thing. As we're going to talk about in just a minute with the way baby boomers are going and the more services that they're going to demand as they age, as we age, I should say, and the people coming behind us are smaller generations, at least the one right behind us is, the economy is going to have to get more productive because there's not going to be enough people to do all the work.
Right, exactly.
Let's talk
Does that
about
mean
this.
I'm going to have to keep working when I'm old?
You're not going to, Joan. I mean, I don't know why you're not already retired.
I mean,
why would somebody as independently wealthy as you are need to work, Joan? I don't get that. So,
well, you'd miss me if I didn't.
Well, that's true, and I appreciate you coming back on. But of course, I know you like the big checks that we send you.
Right, that too.
But you guys are saying next year we're still going to be growing at 120,000 jobs a month. I mean, Joan, think about that.
That's not bad.
What? Joan, on top of 2 years, I mean, 4 million jobs in 05 and 06, and then we're still going to grow at a rate of 1.5 million jobs next year. That's phenomenal.
I don't know where they're coming from.
That's compounding, Joan. By next year, this will be it'll have a compounding effect.
Well, and we'll be talking more about how to hire and keep good employees because it's going to become a growing problem, I think.
That ship has sailed, Joan.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Yeah, no, that's a problem. When I talk to small business owners across the country, when I travel around speaking to them, when I hear from them, from the responses we get from the different channels that we have out there, the number one problem is no longer inflation, which it was for the last 30 years. The number one problem is really not even any longer health care, although that's a biggie. The number one problem is where do I find qualified workers? Not workers, but qualified workers.
Mm.
That's the biggie. And that's not, that. As I say, that ship has sailed. And folks, I got some bad news for you. That is going to be a perennial problem, probably as far as the eye can see. Stand by, Joan. Quick break, 20 after. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate. We'll be right back with Joan Pride.
Well, you don't know.
We're back. It's 23 after the hour. I'm Jim Blessingame, the Small Business Advocate, and my website is www.smallbusinessadvocate.com. And don't forget to subscribe to my free newsletter when you get there. It comes by email on Sunday. And also check out my blog when you get a chance. I think you'll like it. Joan Pride is our guest. Joan, one of the things that she's also, as I say, ladies and gentlemen, as I have said, she's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors, and she and I are working out of the Kiplinger letter this week. Joan, one of the things you point out, though, is that that next year inflation is actually going to go down a little bit. Now, I'm having a hard time understanding how that's going to work, how that's going to happen. Can you explain that to us?
You just have to be a little more optimistic like we are.
Now, we
say that the unemployment rate is going to move out of the danger zone where wage pressures would be mounting fast. So we don't think inflation is going to just drop to nothing. We think
right.
It's going to moderate from 3.4% to 3%. So that's really not that much different.
I'm going to say that.
Uh-oh, he's going out on a limb.
I'm going to disagree with you guys, and I'm going to say the only way you're going to be right next year about inflation is if the economy is if prices go, oil prices go up a lot, and the economy just swoons. It just takes a big, you know, in which case we may actually have what you've called correctly so many times stagflation.
Yeah.
But the other thing that I think if somehow through some miracle, oil prices come down, that might do it. But I really don't see the employment situation contributing to lessening of inflation. We'll have to see about that. You and I will reflect on that again in a few months.
Sure.
Long-term job creation is going to be a problem, isn't it?
Well, and that's, I think, something we had been talking about at the beginning of all of this. You know, the baby boomers want to retire, and if they could, they'd love to retire early. So, and the generation behind us, it just isn't as large. So it's going to be tough.
Well, and that group, my group, of which I am not on the very leading edge of the baby boomers, those are the 60-year-olds, but I'm on the.
You're farther ahead than I am.
Yeah, a little bit. Thank you for pointing that out. But I'm not far from there. But the thing is that Joan, the baby boomers are going to be compounding the challenge on the economy for two reasons. Number one, we're going to stop many baby boomers will stop contributing to the economy, but they're going to continue to require not only regular things, but more services.
Right,
and increased pressure on the younger generation, some of which are not as big as we are.
Right, so some of us are going to have to be actually doing those jobs that we want done.
We may have to be more self-reliant, but what'll be interesting, Joan, getting into the generational wave thing, the Gen Xers are about 50 million, I think. I used to say 30 million, but I think some of my experts are saying that they may be closer to 50 million. And we're the baby boomers are almost 80 million. So we got about a 30 million deficit there on the Gen Xers. The Gen Ys coming behind them is the generation that's still being, some of them of which are still being born. And some of my guys are saying that generation could be as much as 100 million.
Wow.
That it'll certainly be as big as the baby boomers, 80 million, but maybe as much as 100 million.
Gee.
And it'll be interesting as you and I age, Joan, to see how that generation, you know, comes into the marketplace.
I'm not going to age. Speak for yourself.
You're going to be fighting it
tooth and nail,
aren't you?
You bet.
What are your plans for that, Joan? I'm curious about how you're going to.
I'm just going to be in total denial. That's all.
You're not going to actually take any steps like surgery or anything like that, right?
No. I'm just going to assume that I don't look older.
Well, and you know, of course, Mr. Gravity is part of my problem, but yeah, you know, Joan, a little nip and tuck here might not be a bad idea.
A little
botulism under the skin. What's wrong
right.
with that, Joan? the good news, Joan, I think about the employment situation, it seems to me, is we have a solid economy now. In the 90s, we had a bizarre, irrational economy in the late 90s. Our economy now is not based on anything irrational. It's based on solid economics. It's based on we've come a long way to assimilating ourselves into the global economy.
Right.
And so when we have growth now, when we have job creation now, I really believe that it's solid fundamental growth, and I think that's the kind of thing that we can build on. And I think even if the economy does slow, and even if we do go into a little negative growth, as some people have predicted by the end of the year, I think it'll just be a little breather. I don't think it'll be anything significant.
Oh, yeah?
What do you think?
Well, I think it's very possible, sure.
Oh, okay. That's a resounding confirmation of all the things that I just said.
I gotta think that one through first.
Stand by. We're gonna take a quick break. It's 29 after. Joan Pride is our guest. When we come back, we're gonna talk a little bit about world affairs. We're gonna get we got some breaking news, as you know, as they say. That's not so breaking. It happened overnight. That we're gonna talk about and blend into some of the things that Kiplinger covered this week in the letter. It's 29 after. I'm Jim Blasingame. Stay with us.
You're listening to the smartest man in talk radio.
You're going to be listening to one of the smartest people that you probably, and you know who this guy is. It's me.
He's Jim Blasingame.
I am smart. I am smart. S-M-R-T. I mean S-M-A-R-T.
The Small Business Advocate.
We're back. It's 34 after the hour. Thanks for joining me. Thanks for hanging around with me today. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, let's move over to page two and talk about world affairs. Speaking of world affairs, this shouldn't be breaking news to too many people if they've been around at all in the last few hours. But as you know, Joan, many people are saying that there is now a state of war in Palestine.
Boy, it sure looks that way.
The Hamas has kidnapped some Israeli soldiers. There's been some shooting across, back and forth across. Some rockets have been coming back and forth across the borders. The last night, in the middle of the night over there, Israel bombed to smithereens the foreign which one of the buildings was it? I've forgotten, but one of the main Hamas government buildings over there.
Oh, that I didn't know. Oh no.
Oh yeah, overnight overnight in the night in at 1 o'clock in the morning Israel time, Palestine time, they literally leveled one of the major ministerial buildings where one of the big troublemakers of Hamas works, and they did it at night. They expected no one to be there.
Right.
Apparently, no one was killed. There were two or three people who were injured. But I mean, when you have this was an airstrike, and when you go in and you knock a building down like that, I mean, that's at that point Israel has to say we are at war and we're going to react.
Yeah. What else can they do?
Well, that's right. And so now what you've got, Joan, and this brings back to you guys talking about the letter, what should we do with Iran and the nuclear power that they want to become? Some of the people that I regard, whose opinion I regard, have said that Hamas, which is the new, as you know, Joan, is the new political party that won control in Palestine, the Palestinian government, which is basically a terrorist organization, it's
right.
Controlled pretty much by Syria, it seems.
Mm-hmm.
And there's another group there, the Hezbollah, which is always causing trouble over there. It's apparently fully a client organization of Iran. And we know what Iran wants to do with Israel. They want to bomb it into oblivion.
Right.
They want to go away and not exist on the planet Earth anymore. And so we got a big problem over there, Joan.
And it seems to be growing by the minute at this point.
And none of that is about oil, is it?
No, oh no, no.
Now, this is about one group of people hating another group of people.
Right.
And, Joan, that complicates issues. What this very well may happen, Joan, and this could happen, you know, like the assassination of the Archduke, you know.
That started World War I.
World War One.
Yeah.
There could be a tipping point that could happen that could bring the West into this thing.
Yeah, it could.
And so it'll be interesting to see whether, you know, I would think, Joan, that Iran and Syria would like it better if the U.S. were not right in their neighborhood occupying Iraq right now.
Right.
You'd have to believe that things would be different in terms of those what those countries would do if we weren't sort of wedged between them over there. What do you think?
Right. Well, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I can see that.
But what are we going to do with and we got North Korea, Joan.
That's right.
And we can't get the Chinese and the Russians to work and play well
right.
with others.
Good segue back to the letter. I'm
yeah.
impressed.
Well,
yeah,
I've done this before. This is my, this is my first rodeo.
Well, unfortunately, this is one of those items where we don't really have an answer here. We're kind of painting a rather bleak picture. There aren't a lot of good options for the U.S. right now in this standoff.
It's not a good thing when diplomacy, and I mean reasonable leadership, free world kind of diplomacy depends upon the Russians and the Chinese. We need the Russians to put pressure on Iran. We need Chinese to put pressure on North Korea. Mm-hmm. And they won't even join a group of nations in the UN and vote for sanctions, will they?
Right. They're continuing to block sanctions. That's right.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure what else we can do.
And, Joan, is there any doubt in anybody's mind that we still live in a dangerous world?
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Everywhere you turn right now.
We cannot be naive about the world we live in.
Right.
And it's, you know, there are too many evil people out there, folks, who want to control other lives. They don't want freedom to flourish. And as long as we have those people, we're going to always live in a dangerous world. It's 20 Till. I'm Jim Blasingame. We're going to talk about health care when we come back after these messages. 20 Till. Stay with us. Back at 17 Till. There's a little Steely Dan for you there. Outstanding music. Joan Pride is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And as you know, I always encourage you to check out their website at kiplinger.com. And it's an outstanding site. A lot of free stuff there. But also, if you subscribe to any of their publications, you can actually get into the back part of the site where they've got some really good stuff. And any of those publications include the Kiplinger Letter, the weekly flagship letter that Joan and I work off every week. And then we've got the three biweeklies, the California, the Tax, and the Agriculture Letters. And then on the newsstands, you can get a magazine that Joan's going to tell you about. What is it, Joan?
Right. It's called Kiplinger's Personal Finance Magazine.
And you can subscribe to it. You can buy it at your local newsstands. They still got that 30-day free trial thing going, haven't you, Joan?
You bet.
So ask them for that and check it out when you get a chance. Joan, before we leave the world affairs issue, or section, I should say, President-elect Felipe Calderon is the apparent winner, replacing President Fox. And he is the more centrist guy, having defeated the leftist guy who doesn't want to give up, does he?
Right. And, yes, Mr. Obrador has been demanding a recount.
Yeah.
And I guess Mr. Calderon has said he would agree to, I guess, was it a partial recount? I didn't quite understand that.
Mm-hmm. I don't know. But we don't need a leftist government in Mexico. I mean, the Fox government, which is not leftist, was ineffective enough. Let alone bringing in a leftist group down there. But that's another challenge that we've got right there, Joan. We need Mexico to get their economy going. That's one of the reasons why we've got an immigration problem, is because the economy is so poor in Mexico.
Yes, exactly.
And unfortunately, Mexico has done a very poor job of taking advantage of the benefits that NAFTA provided them.
Exactly.
And
that's
so that's a bad thing. Joan, let's move down and talk about the healthcare issue.
Yeah.
I thought you'd be interested to know. This is not on the letter, folks, but this is something I wanted Joan to know about. I had Senator Michael Enzi on the show earlier this week. Now, Senator Enzi is from Wyoming. He's a Republican from Wyoming. He's the guy who is the sponsor of and the champion of small business health plans in Congress.
Mm.
He believes he's four votes away from getting it out of committee so it can get on the floor and be debated and voted up or down. He thinks that is this something that we can get done? You know, isn't this something that's not going to get done in election year? He said this is a perfect time for this. He said this is an election year issue. And he said, I've got it on hold. I've got it sitting there. He said, I can bring it up in a second's notice. He said a lot of the issues that we were stuck, that people tried to amend this bill to, that complicated this bill, he said those issues have been resolved. They're off the table. They're not even involved. He said all I've got to do is get four more people to agree to vote for this thing, and he said we can bring this up and get it on the floor this year. How about that?
Wow, this year?
Yeah. Yeah, I thought that it was gone because of the election year, but his point is the politics a lot of the political elements of this that were, you know, were sort of the other issues that they, you know, this, you know, as you know, Joan, no bill ever comes up all by itself. There's always amendments and riders and everything else that gets stuck to them.
Right.
And he said those issues that were part of the original bill, the original vote, are not there anymore.
Mm.
So anyway, that was good news on the health care front. I hope it's good news. I'll tell you, Joan, if you ever get a chance to meet him, he's a swell guy.
Well, and that's, you know, it's not every day a sitting senator comes on a radio show. You should be pleased that he did that.
Well, we do pretty good. We get the senators on pretty good.
Now you do.
Well, I appreciate that. But I'll tell you, I met him a month ago, and I'll never forget. I mean, the guy, I introduced myself, and I gave him my card, and he pulled out his own wallet and pulled a card out of his wallet and gave it to me. Now, most of the time, they say, see that man over there? That's you know, he's my man.
Talk to my guy.
Yeah. But I mean, this he's a regular guy, and we need more Senator Enzies in Washington, folks. And mm-hmm. you folks listening over the radio in Wyoming, good for you. I'm proud for you guys. Joan, interesting things happening in the automobile industry. What's going on?
Well, yeah, this is kind of a strange, a brave new world for the big three or the big four or however many we have now. You know, there's a lot of partnering going on, and I think what we're focusing on, what caused us to write this item, was General Motors pairing with Nissan and Renault, and we say that's only the beginning.
Joan, you said there's a lot of partnering going on, and I think that is the result, but the cause of it is a lot of desperation.
On the part of the American auto manufacturers,
desperate
no question.
People do desperate
right.
things.
Now, do you think this is a bad thing, though?
I don't know. I don't think it's a bad thing. Nissan is not having. Does not. I think probably not having the success that Honda is probably. Maybe Toyota, but you know, I don't know what Nissan's circumstances are. Renault is not. I hate to see, if Renault is still a French company, I hate to see a U.S. company get involved with the French. Joan, you know how I feel about the French.
Yes, I know.
But it'll be interesting. But look what happened. You know, Chrysler did this. Chrysler is going to wind up looking like a visionary, aren't they?
Right. Well, that's true, yeah.
And of course, you also mentioned that Ford may be going with Peugeot and Citroën. Which is, I think it's...
Well, and you could have a Honda Daimler Chrysler grouping. That's pretty
exactly.
amazing, too.
It is becoming a global economy, folks. I'm not sure I like all this. The American Big Three are now going to be, maybe going to be international companies. It'll be interesting. Of course, actually, that's been going on for a long time, because Ford owns Jaguar. Tintail, stay with us. We'll be right back. We're back at 7 till. I'm Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate, and Joan Pratt is our guest. She's senior editor with the Kiplinger Editors. And Joan, you being Kiplinger's small business correspondent, you guys carve out a little section just for us just about every week. And what's the news there?
We try. Well, we're saying that, first of all, that the Export-Import Bank is going to loosen some rules having to do with guaranteed loans, and that so small exporters are going to get more assistance from the Ex-Im Bank. And
that's good news.
I know that they're also on kind of a campaign to, I guess, get more small companies to realize that the Ex-Im is there and can help them.
Mm-hmm. What the Ex-Im does, folks, and I'm not an expert in this, Joan, so you know you jump in any time here. But basically, what the Ex-Im does is help small businesses make the financial connections and get
right.
and get their money get paid. And they also help on the cash flow side. I think you can get some help from cash flow. In other words, they're sort of the intermediary between the money on the other side of the pond and your money.
Right. It kind of involves also shoring up the buyer
right.
in some cases, too.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. And so they provide good services. And this is an area, folks, where I still encourage people, Joan, to get involved with the Commercial Services Division of the Department of Commerce. So
right.
that they, because those people can help them get educated on Ex-Im Bank.
Yeah, they really should.
But you're saying that they're actually lowering some of the barriers to entry for small businesses.
Right. Yes, making it easier.
Yeah, that's good. We like that news. All right, what else? Yeah.
Well, just very quickly, the SBA is going to get some help from Congress. There are some regulations that were making it difficult for small franchisees to get loans and contract help from the SBA, and those regulations are going to get fixed.
Right, right.
And finally, the bad news, the EPA was trying to ease some regulations that had to do with reporting requirements for small businesses that, you know, emit toxic substances into the atmosphere, but Congress is blocking those rules, at least temporarily, because state and local governments have complained that they're worried they're not going to get enough information if small firms are allowed to go to the so-called short form on their reporting.
All right. That sounds
Sorry
good.
About that.
That's okay. Joan, you want to give us a report on the new SBA administrator?
Oh, Mr. Preston. He was just confirmed just days ago.
Stephen Preston.
Stephen Preston. We are waiting to see what he's going to do. And he was put through his paces in the committee, but I guess he did well because I think he was approved
Unanimously. I think so, too. Did you attend any of the hearings?
I virtually attended part of the one they had in the Senate.
Right. How did that go?
It sounded like it did. It was basically them telling him he's got a tough job ahead of him and that there's a lot going on that he needs to jump right into. A lot of the talk had to do with disaster assistance and
right.
SBA's role in the future.
Which a lot of people don't realize how much of a role that the SBA is required to play in disaster relief. And by the way, he's replacing Hector Barreto,
right.
who is still our friend, folks, and you're going to be hearing from Hector in the future, too. But, Joan, we're working really hard, and we've already made our contacts. We're going to get the new administrator on the show really soon. So
I would think he'd be there sooner rather than later.
I reminded my good friends at the SBA, you know, almost all of the outlets are going to want him now to be on the show, be on their shows because he's brand new.
Right.
Right. It's the news, right? And I reminded them that when long after he's not news anymore, we're the ones who will be inviting him back. So
well, that's true.
So I reminded them of that. But the big things with the SBA and the disaster relief, Joan, mm-hmm. is that whoever said that to him is right. That's where his challenges are going to be. The SBA does a great job of helping small businesses in doing the things that the SBA was basically chartered to do. But with this disaster relief, you know, every time FEMA doesn't do their job and falls on their face, the SBA is part of the collateral damage.
Well, and they also have to run the whole program for homeowners as well,
right.
which is not what they normally do.
That's exactly right. And when you have a disaster like Katrina, you know, they just can't get geared up for that quick.
Right.
And they don't have the budget for it. And I'm going to say this one last time, that is what happened to Hector Barreto when he got his star stopped shining as much. He got blamed for a lot of stuff that was not his fault, folks. And I know this because I did the research on it, and it was not his fault. Hector did a great job.
Right.
Joan, thank you for being here today. Good job, as always.
Thank you, Jim.
And we'll see you next week.
Well, you're going to have me back? Great.
Yeah, and you'll get another check, too. It'll
be
in the mail.
Terrific.
Thanks, Joan. Got to go for this hour. Before I do, I want to thank my heroes, small business owners. This is Jim Blassingame, the Small Business Advocate. And as you know, this program is for you. I'll see you tomorrow.
Insperity presents the Small Business Advocate Show with Jim Blassingame. This is a copyrighted production of Small Business Network, Inc., intended for the private use of our audience. Except as otherwise provided by copyright law, all other copying, redistribution, or publication without prior written consent is prohibited. All rights reserved.